Bristol Rugby, Bear Country in a rugby heartland. But for all that passion and history, they were still English rugby's yo-yo club, bouncing between the Premiership and the second-tier Championship, never able to cement themselves as an established top-flight presence. That era is now unrecognisable from the club that Bristol have become under Director of Rugby Pat Lamb. In the latest episode of our Rugby Stories podcast series, we chart the season when Bristol truly announced themselves, winning their first European trophy, the Challenge Cup, against a backdrop of a global pandemic.
132 years of rugby in Bristol and never anything like this.
Do you reckon the fans got to see the end of that, or are they getting kicked out of the pub?
Randrandra, Piatau, Earl, devastating.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you who scored it.
Get the hairdryer out.
I'd been told that Pat was a bit of a dictator.
And everyone told me, not me telling them, it's not good enough.
One-on-one, Docks inside!
Trust the process.
Yeah, look, we are okay at rugby.
You're thinking, ooh.
Oh, it's European perfection!
It's a bit like you've been holding your breath for 80 minutes and suddenly you can breathe again.
Yes! Big bears, daddy bears.
In Rugby Stories, you'll get the full, extended, uncut anecdotes from players, coaches, and key figures, some never told before. Bristol is a city divided between two football teams, City and Rovers. Where rugby is concerned, though, there's only one club. Formed in 1888, this is Bear Country, and it unites everyone, but for much of its history, Bristol haven't been one of the truly elite teams. Dave Atwood was one of the lucky few who went on to play for his boyhood club, and his performances at Lock would earn him a place in the England team. But for large parts of Atwood's two spells at Bristol, and for as many years in the stands as a fan, he was all too aware that his team were a sleeping giant that enjoyed one too many lions.
So I started at Bristol in the really early teens for me. I was involved with some of the Bristol schools, some of the competition stuff. I got involved in the academy. It was a very kind of gritty club back then, starting to kind of shine. It's a very rugby city, Bristol. Part of that is to do with the balance of Bristol City and Bristol Rovers in terms of football competing with one another. There's only really been Bristol Rugby Club. So there's a huge rugby culture here. So I was brought up on that. I remember feeling all this excitement about the players on the pitch, but coming and sitting in the stand as a young fan and kind of being a bit disappointed with results. And I think sometimes you don't really understand why that is. I'm sure in the squad they didn't fully understand why that was.
The club spent much of the last few decades moving between the top and second tier of English rugby. Even with a few quid and some tasty signings, they couldn't cement themselves as a regular Premiership side. Into this changeable team came fly half Callum Sheedy. The Welshman has been on Bristol's books for his whole career, and he began to break into the side during another tumultuous period in the club's history.
My second season I came, we managed to get promoted via the playoffs in the Premiership straight back down.
Bristol continuing to find this very hard going. And in the end, Bristol not quite good enough. The bid to survive their first season back in the top flight has ended in failure.
It's pretty horrendous, the feeling of getting relegated, to be honest with you, because you're the worst in the league. And, you know, we were the whipping boys and teams would play us and teams would think, oh, it's only Bristol. Yeah, 5 points. We'd get 70 points in a few games. And that was just the norm for teams. And it's pretty humiliating, to be honest, when you go to crowds and they're half full because you're only playing Bristol. And yeah, pretty embarrassing.
Bristol's Premiership dream has died.
So it was a bit of a yo-yo club. We didn't really have direction. We didn't have a vision.
In the summer of 2017, a man came into the side who would change all that. As a player, Pat Lamb helped Newcastle Falcons win the Premiership and Northampton Saints win the Heineken Cup and played in 3 World Cups for Samoa. He brought that intensity and focus to coaching and had a clear idea on how rugby should be played, fast and free, which is how Connacht played as he led them to their first ever major trophy, the 2016 Pro 12 title. The Samoan was the man chairman Chris Bowie identified as the one to revive Bristol and lead them out of the championship once more. And he had a plan.
It starts with the dream, you know. I mean, you dream to hold all the trophies up. That's great, but then it needs the plan. And once you got the plan, then that's where the belief comes, because you got a dream and it's something you really want to achieve, but then the plan is the most important thing. Putting that together with key people.
You know, Pat was very clear with the vision he had for the club. And, you know, we definitely talked the talk. And, you know, I always remember the first meeting he had. He was very frank and said, this is where we want to be in 2 years. This is where we want to be in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. If you don't believe in it, if you don't 100% believe in it, the door's there. You can go. Pat definitely wants players who are 100% on the bus and 100% sort of going in that same direction that he wants to go.
Interestingly, I'd been told that Pat was a bit of a dictator. It's Pat way or the highway. Often it's easy to paint that in a really negative light, but I think ultimately, if he's trying to imprint his vision on the rugby club, his vision on the field, like that needs to be true. It needs to be his vision, not diluted down by other people and other coaches having their input and tweaking things. And I think Pat's very understanding that different people take on different information in different ways. They take it at different speeds. And I think that was really clear.
Lam set about putting his plan into action. Despite their second-tier status, Lam oversaw a raft of changes to the playing staff in 2017, capped off with internationals like Australia's Luke Morihan and All Blacks' Stephen Luatua. And those new signings helped blast Bristol back into the big time.
It was a real challenge that year because obviously I was new. I didn't know anybody, the players, so I was building relationships as well. And there's a real expectation that we should win. But what made it difficult for games is that I realised analysis is a waste of time because every time we played Bedford or Pirates, or it was their best game ever. And funny enough, a lot of those teams lost the week after when they gave us a real tough run because they put everything into it. We only lost one game to Jersey and we should never have lost the game. In fact, it was probably a good fine tuner because after that we played some of our better rugby because of that loss. Yeah, I think when you're going, I think we were 15 or 16 on the trot. So the last five, six games of the season were really good.
Steve Luatua obviously came in early on, an incredibly gifted rugby player, but more than that, a very, very diligent professional. The fact that he's been able to compete and help bring the club up through the championship has really given good roots to the club in the Premiership.
Promotion in Lamb's first year in charge. But if the players thought Lamb would rest on his laurels, the summer brought more huge changes. There was a rebrand to become the Bristol Bears, and joining those now grown-up Cubs were Harry Thacker from Leicester, John Afoa from Gloucester, and one of the game's most exciting and expensive attackers, All Black fullback Charles Piatau from Ulster.
So the first year I brought in 20 players. The second year was like 19 players.
Bringing Charles Piatau was a very big move because it was a huge statement of intent.
He's a box office rugby player, lightning left footstep, great fend and ability to break any tackle line.
But also it was an aspirational figure for other players in the squad. The Charlie Powells and people like Piers O'Connor, when they came to Bristol, they would look at Charles and see that this is the kind of player I could become.
There's no stopping Charles Piatau.
The squad had to be managed very, very carefully, but also the brand of rugby. Bristol Bears had to rely on the rugby as much as the players in order to make themselves a team that not just survived in the Premiership, but thrived in it. When they came up, there was a lot of surprise, and that surprise carried on all season because people felt, well, Bristol were the promoted team, they should probably be struggling, but they were turning over big teams home and away. They got some amazing results that year.
Ian Madigan kicks Bristol to glory.
And some of that was because of some very good players that they'd managed to get hold of, but a lot of that was down to the rugby.
In-house, we'd had targets that, you know, we wanted to make top six, and although like we never made that public, and our goal, our overall goal was to stay in the Premiership, we would never settle for that. And each week we'd be looking at, right, can we make top six? Can we make Champions Cup? That sort of stuff.
For Bristol Bears, well, Pat Lam knows his team have made a big mark on their return to the top table.
To finish ninth, but only be 5 points, competition points, of fourth place was gutting. And everyone said, well done, it was a great season. First year up, we finished ninth, the highest I think any team's done when they've come up. Yeah, well, that was okay, but I was upset that we could have done this. But I knew that we'd made a lot of growth and we can use that to springboard onto the following season.
Bristol had enjoyed a decent enough first season back in the Premiership, ninth place and a Challenge Cup quarter-final. So, to the 2019-2020 season, Bristol were back in the Challenge Cup, European rugby's second-tier competition. Sheedy and his teammates now had their sights set on winning a major trophy.
Whatever competition we enter, Challenge Cup, Premiership Cup, any cup it is, we want to win it. I think Pat would be go against everything he stands for if he put a side up which he didn't think he'd win, and I would never expect him to, and I know he never would, because, you know, he is a ridiculous, obsessed winner, and that is, you know, unbelievable for us to see him as a leader. And when your leader wants to win as much as Pat, it's definitely contagious, and that rubs off on the players. Like, even when we're playing training games, like, the obsession to win is ridiculous, and yeah, that definitely comes from Pat. So yeah, our target is to win every competition we enter.
Bristol started the European campaign in impressive style, comfortably beating Italian club Zebre and French side Brive in Pool 4, before a doubleheader against French heavyweight Stade Francais, the 14-time champions of the French top 14. Bristol won the home tie 37-11 at Ashton Gate, but the real test would come away in Paris.
Here we are, just 5 minutes away from kickoff between Stade Francais and Bristol in tonight's Challenge Cup match. Plenty at stake for the Bears. They're eager to wrap up Pool 4.
The key match was going back to Stade Francais.
It's clinical from Bristol Bears. We're so used to seeing them turn on the style, turn on the razzle-dazzle. But when they have to, they can also stick it up the jumper. The French defence all over the place, and Harry Thacker, the show-stopping hooker, showing a different side to his game.
You do kind of have to take a step back and think, geez, like 4 years ago, we'd be on the bus to, you know, a 5-hour bus trip to Doncaster away or Leeds away. And now you're playing in the middle of Paris with a hostile sellout crowd. One of my favourite experiences in rugby.
But again, we got through it. And I, at that stage, I thought that it really brought a lot of guys together because of the fact that we didn't have our so-called number one players all on the field, but we played our way to get through against some unbelievable international players on the opposite team, and emphasising the we versus me mentality. And those boys did really well.
It was one of the most significant results in the club's history. For me, that was a real dawning, like, this is a different club. We're an intimidating club to play against now.
Pool 4 was wrapped up with Bristol top and earning a home quarter final. But just as the momentum was building, a seismic event would bring rugby and entire nations to a halt.
The coronavirus is the biggest threat this country has faced for decades.
We got called in for a meeting, everyone into the gym, and it was like, right, we're all going home. You're going to be home until the foreseeable. So everyone took like one dumbbell home with them and a plate and some bands and stuff like that. It was like, right, we'll go home. We don't know how long you're going to be at home.
Obviously, none of us really knew what was going on. We just think, a couple of weeks away, oh, this is quite fun. We get a couple of weeks break in the mid-season. Happy days, brilliant. And then you start sort of seeing stuff on the news and start thinking, right, okay, this is serious.
We tried to stay in contact with Zoom meetings and quizzes, the same like the family quiz where your grandma can't mute herself. We basically had to deal with all of that. Who was the best at the quizzes? I'll be honest, Callum Sheedy has got a pretty encyclopedic football knowledge. That was something that came out of the quizzes. I tell you who else, maybe not surprised because he's a bright bloke, is Ed Holmes. Actually, a colossal amount of quiz knowledge in there. I think Ed taught me that a group of crows is called a murder. Fun fact.
Yeah, I always believed that we'd get the chance to finish the job that we'd started. We were in a good chance of winning Europe. We were in a good chance of winning the Premiership. And I'd watched lots of videos, like old rugby games, old games of ours, which were good. And, you know, I kind of give myself a little pep talk. The first half of lockdown, maybe I was on the, oh, this is easy life. This is easy. And then after a couple of weeks, I probably thought, right, let's knuckle down. What do we actually want? And that definitely sort of switched my focus.
It made us more efficient. But I think what it also appreciated was the value of when we come back and appreciating time together. And that's why when we finally got back and everyone got to see each other again, it just was another level.
Rugby returned after a gap of almost 5 months, but Lamb and Bristol had been busy in the lockdowns. Sheedy and Atwell came back to the club and were met with some significant new faces.
It was a very strange situation that we were still mid-season and suddenly the team was changing.
Joining back in rugby and playing when the season should almost be finished and whatever it was bizarre.
Lamb had the chance to do a deal with relegated Saracens, bringing in flying back Max Malins and forward Ben Earl on loan.
What I saw was an opportunity of two young English players who were quality players being able to come in and make a difference, and also us to make a difference to them. You know, they've been Saracens right through. They get a chance instead of going into the Championship that they can further their careers by developing. So it was a good partnership with us and Saracens.
Earl striding away and Earl scores.
England prop Kyle Sinclair came in from Harlequins, and Semi Randradra blasted into the team from Bordeaux and immediately made an impression on Sheedy and everybody else.
You speak to any of the backline, being able to see Semi Randradra in full flight for the first time was special.
Randradra burst through. This is where he's so destructive. Backhand offload, out of the back door, to the line. Brilliant try.
I still got to pinch myself now when I see him.
Randall, Randradra, brilliant angle, sensational. He's up over halfway. There's the step. They're chasing him down. Three of them. Charles Piatow back to Randradra, who's still going and manages to get over to score.
It was quite empowering to feel like we're already really good and now we've got more quality coming in, which is only going to add strength to us.
8 months to the day since their last European match, Bristol were in a quarter-final. They were home to the Dragons, led by Lamb's former teammate Dean Ryan. The pair had won the Premiership as players. Now they would clash as coaches.
It was a challenging game because everyone just assumed we're going to win that. That's the Dragons. But I knew the quality of the team, and my good mate Dean Ryan from my Newcastle days was there in charge, which meant that this was going to be tough. And I knew how Dean used to, you know, motivate me when I played, that it was going to be a very similar thing, that this wasn't going to be as easy as people thought.
You know, when we were drawn against the Dragons, I was well aware of the quality they had, and they had internationals everywhere.
This is the first time we'll ever see Bristol play in an absolute knockout game. Before that, they've had the ability to play with this ethos and this culture that he's installed in the players, almost a free abandonment to play rugby, to trust yourself and to play from anywhere on the field if you see it's right. Tonight is the first test of whether they actually really believe that's the case.
We treated that game very much as we weren't favourites, we had everything to prove. And if we were going to have any currency in the latter stages of the competition, then we needed a real statement of intent with what we were planning to do against the Dragons.
You know, this team mean business.
Absolutely immaculate kick pass. Hewitt gathers, and Hewitt will score.
We run to our post, and we just said, like, we got to sort our stuff out here, boys, because before we know it, we're going to be 20-30 nil down. There's going to be no coming back from this.
Dean Ryan's Dragons made the better start. Bristol were losing and seemed like the occasion was getting to them. Atwood knew they needed a comeback.
I remember getting a bit of a chewing out about the breakdown.
They won the penalty off the back of that.
And coming out with a bit of a vengeance, and I think that opened the floodgates a little bit for the guys out wide.
Semi Randradra feeding it out to Piatow. Those two terrorising the Dragons at the moment. And it's finished by Ben Earl. And Bristol have two in as many minutes. Randradra, Piatow, Earl, devastating.
I think Ben had scored about 7 in 5 games at that stage. He was on fire, and Semi made me look okay a couple of times.
Time to accelerate now through Sheedy, and here's Randradra. Two to beat. Round one. Puts his foot down and scrambles for the corner. There he is. Semi Randradra.
You know, when we were playing free throw in rugby, we were tough to handle. The performance we were actually pretty happy with if you take away that first 20 minutes. But we knew that if we played like that for the first 20 against Bordeaux in the next round, that we'd have a big shock.
The build-up to the Bordeaux semi-final was all about Semi Randradra. Lamb would need his star man to turn up against his former team, but there was no room for sentiment at Ashton Gate.
Every game, it's important to celebrate a win, but I'm pretty consistent. The boys know that regardless of the score, I'll always ask them and then us as a team to let's look at what we've done well, regardless of the outcome, and let's look at what we can do better. That's where our growth came from. That's where our confidence came from, by acknowledging the good stuff, and growth by looking at things we can do better.
So coming into the Bordeaux week, obviously everyone's very aware that that's where Semi's come from. And there was a lot of kind of conversation with Semi about them, the style of rugby they played. And that took a lot of the limelight away from the rest of our squad. And it was very much focused on Semi, which is definitely a really helpful thing.
Yeah, but the semi-final week after the quarter-final, it was perfect.
That was another level up again.
Kept us in that European mode, kept us in that cup mode.
Bristol, like their opponents, bidding for a first ever European final. It's 20 years since they reached the last four of this competition. The manner in which they steamed into the semis with victory over the Dragons says they really do mean business.
Similar to the quarter-final, we started off pretty poor, pretty sloppy.
Through the middle goes Wockey. And the offloading game in very good nick. This is Jalibert one-on-one with Maylands. He's done him all ends up.
I was thinking then, right, okay, this is tough.
Another slow start in Europe. A Mathieu Jalibert trying two penalties from the same man. Bristol were 13-0 down and heading into half-time with their Challenge Cup hopes in the balance. But a crucial moment with 2 minutes left turned the tide.
Pietau, Randrandra. Now then, big numbers, and he's exploited that quite brilliantly. Luatua goes in, and Bristol are back in business. Semi Randrandra, yet again causing havoc in Europe.
That try just before half-time was massive. We needed that because you go in nil, you're thinking, right, mindset-wise, this is a struggle, but, you know, managed to get that 7 points on the board.
That gave us a little bit of confidence that the sticking to process mindset was the right thing to do. A half-time opportunity to reset and adjust your kind of emotional standing, your mental disposition in a game is invaluable. I'm fortunate enough that I've been involved in enough rugby to recognise that there's two halves to a game. Like, just because someone has a purple patch doesn't mean the game's going to go that way. Things can turn around very, very quickly in the sport.
It's always tough when we're losing at halftime because you're thinking, right, is Pat going to get the hairdryer out or is it going to be calm? There's a bit of, like, you can tell there's a bit of a nervous energy amongst the boys, and our Pat was real calm. He was, you know, he was brilliant, and he said, stick to our structures, stick to our systems, and we can do it.
Trust the process. That's all it is. Whatever we do, you know, we always say if we're behind, the system will do it. You know, what changes is the level of commitment, the level of commitment to it. I don't want you to come on and try and make things happen. What you do is you make the system happen. You're playing together as a team, not as 15 individuals.
Yeah, we managed to go 10-minute blocks, minute by minute. Let's get ourselves back into the game. I remember Harry Randall put through a great grubber kick for Max Malins.
Randall, oh, that's very clever off the outside edge of the boot, and Malins will skip in.
We're in front, brilliant. Let's control the game. Of course, let Bordeaux back in.
Les Gorg sends it out, and Dweba will skip through.
Oh. They score 20 all, I think it was.
And that is it for 82 and nearly a half minutes. 20 points apiece, two tries apiece.
Extra time, the biggest test of Bristol's resolve. But if there were nerves, they weren't coming from Atwood & Co.
I think we were disappointed to have got to extra time, but I certainly feel like emotionally we felt like that was probably going to be to our advantage, provided we could find the mental determination to prove that we're willing to work that bit harder.
It was really pleasing in extra time coming down. I looked at the faces of the guys and they were all so much belief, we'll do this.
Yeah, the messages then coming on at extra time, no panic, stick to our structures.
We talked about the play that we'd do straight after, you know, our first lineup.
Sheedy, Randrandra, seems like a good policy.
And it was, like, again, straight off the training park when Max Malins put an offload to Pearce.
Malins, he's got it away. It's Pearce O'Connor. One-on-one. Dots inside. Pearce O'Connor for Bristol.
He has scored a great try. Max Malins scores a try and we end up winning quite comfortably in extra time.
Randrandra licking his lips. Flips it on its way to Malins. Looking for his seconds and looking to point Bristol's way to the Challenge Cup final, surely from here. It's a first European final for Pat Lamb's men. Four tries, extra time. What a scrap here at Ashton Gate.
You know, I remember that, I think the pubs were closing at 10 o'clock or something, and the game finished at 20 past 10, and I was, as soon as it finished, I was thinking, do you reckon the fans got to see the end of that, or they were getting kicked out of the pub? And no, great evening, and yeah, I'm sure we made the city proud of that one.
Celebrating the semi-final was something that we needed to do as a squad. I think the city needed to do. I think it had been a long time since this club had earned its right to play in a final, let alone win a final. So I think we needed to recognise the achievement that we'd come by. That was our last opportunity for a home fixture. That was our last opportunity for kind of immediacy of friends and family. And I think one of the things we knew was that when the final came around, that wasn't going to be an option for us.
Celebrations in Europe, but disappointment in the league. Despite finishing third and making the playoffs, Bristol couldn't quite get to Twickenham.
Bristol back in the big time this season, make no mistake, but the league campaign has been ended by Wasps.
Losing a Premiership semi-final is, yeah, it's the worst feeling I've had on a rugby pitch. We just didn't perform and we weren't ourselves, and I think that was the biggest frustration for us.
Losing out in the Premiership was an interesting emotional dilemma for us, because I think certainly the season started off and the Premiership was the focus, and I think as results didn't quite go our way here and there, we were getting loads of credit, loads of the pundits, well, Bristol, wonderful rugby, but ultimately playing wonderful rugby is slightly meaningless if you don't lift the trophy, if you don't get your name etched on the scoreboard, like, we won. It was very disappointing to lose out in the playoff situation. I certainly think we felt like, given the results in Europe, given the brand of rugby, given some of the results we'd had, we were unfortunate not to manage to do a little bit better in terms of the Premiership playoffs.
But as it happened, we were very fortunate that we had a Challenge Cup final the week after, and I can say that it was a good thing for us, because it wasn't, and I hated it and it was horrible and the feeling was awful. But Monday came and we parked it up and we knew that we had a chance to sort of make history, and we had a chance to not put those wrongs right, but kind of get a bit of our pride back and make the city proud.
That gave us obviously the space to put a little bit more emphasis on the European competition and salvage what we needed to, or certainly have an attempt at finishing the season off, and not only giving ourselves some vindication, but also in some way saying thank you to the guys that had done all the work through the group stages to get us to this point, but obviously weren't around to share in that.
One of the things I always like with finals, and my key message is, let's celebrate. Let's not die wandering. Let's go out and celebrate who we are. Let's celebrate the work we've done. Let's celebrate our culture. You know, that our closeness and the things that we do are for moments like this. Let's celebrate the opportunity.
After domestic defeat, there was still the chance to end the season in triumph. The European Challenge Cup final. And if Bristol were to win their first European title, they'd need to overcome rugby royalty. Toulon, three-time Heineken Cup champions and the only team to ever win it 3 years in a row. The French side knew how to win trophies wherever they went. Because of the pandemic, the final was moved to Provence's stadium north of the original host city, Marseille. And to make matters worse for Bristol, COVID restrictions meant they would be without any fans, while the French side would be allowed 1,000 of their own. Atwood felt preparations could not have been much tougher.
The week of the Challenge Cup final was probably the most disrupted week in professional rugby I've been involved with. The travel arrangements, the fact that there's no fans, the fact that people haven't been in a final, then we've had to change training, we've had to change venue, there's concerns about COVID, there's people getting tested. Even up to the day of the game, on the day of the game, suddenly they're saying that there are going to be 1,000 French fans there. And now there's arguments about, well, hang on a minute, that's a COVID risk.
It was hostile out there, and just driving into the stadium alone, there was Toulon flags waving at our bus. And it was incredible. You know, it was pretty hostile, but it was brilliant. And looking around the change room, I remember, although it was pretty quiet, boys were focused and, you know, little bits of banter here and there, but, you know, the edge was right. And I talk about that boiling point. I could feel we were bubbling, and it had a really good feel to it.
It was awful for our supporters. But I'll tell you what was funny is that they said there'd be 1,000, they let 1,000 people in the crowd, which is obviously all too long because they're about an hour down the road. But I tell you, we used that to our advantage. It was a shock to have nothing. And then suddenly the French fans and their drums and everything. And it was like, wow, it just brought real atmosphere to the place. But we used their fans as a tool for us, as a positive for us. And the boys were buzzing. They suddenly had noise in the ground. And we didn't care that it was their fans. It was the fact that there was some excitement. And that got the boys going too. We just pretended they were our fans.
And certainly in the last kind of last moments before we went out, there was a lot of postulating, should we say.
Looking at the Toulon side and you see Parise, Etzebeth, you're thinking, ooh.
I mean, I'm not a small bloke, and Joe Joyce is not a small bloke, and their second rows absolutely loomed over the two of us. And I think that's not a position I've been in other than when I was playing with Toulon, kind of thing. So that was a really interesting challenge for us in terms of how we were gonna manage that.
Never mind the opposition, there were huge challenges for Bristol within their own camp. Fullback Charles Pietau, one of Lamb's key signings, was out injured. And in the week leading up to Bristol's biggest night, their inspirational captain Stephen Luatua was back in the UK, awaiting the birth of his child. The team waited for news of Luatua. Callum Sheedy didn't know if his captain would be making a last-minute dash to Provence.
Charles Pietau was injured. Stephen Luatua decides to have a baby the day of the Challenge Cup. It's kind of, you could be a fighter or a victim, Pat likes to say, and what do? We feel sorry for ourselves? Oh, Charles isn't playing. Oh, no, Stevie's not playing. Our captain's not playing. Or do you think, right, we're going to go out there, we're going to do it for Stevie. He didn't decide to have the baby on the day. He's been our leader for years. Charles doesn't decide to get injured. We'll do it for those boys who have been with us all year.
There's the greatest achievement and thing that I believe fathers should be at is at the birth of their child, if they can. And Stephen was torn, but he knew he wanted to be there and I wanted him to be there.
We weren't sure, was Stephen Luatua going to get the private jet out? Was he just going to turn up for kickoff? Was he going to lead us out? No one knew. And Pat got us in and said, Stevie's had the baby. The circle erupted. Everyone was buzzing, whooping, cheering, hugging each other. We were so happy for Steve. Right, let's stop that now. Let's go and win a Challenge Cup. And that's exactly what it was. That's brilliant. That's what Bristol Bears is all about. That's what Bristol as a city is all about. When your backs are against the wall, you come out swinging and you come out punching harder than ever.
The whole plan was to get right in their faces. We had to because we couldn't allow them momentum with their big players. But we wanted to move the ball. And the start of the game was straight off the training field. It was unbelievable how it worked out.
Bristol immediately on the burst, and how about this? What a start this would be! Harry Randall's going to score! Oh, it's European perfection! It's as if they ran from Bristol all the way to X and carried the ball with them. It's a stunning start!
That try after 12 seconds, that showed everyone we were ready. We'd been working on it. You know, we knew that the wing would chase hard, and Semi had a connection with Malapati down that left wing. And yeah, I reckon we trained it 4, 5, 6 times in the week. And just one of those things, everything we thought would happen happened exactly the way it did. And Alapati runs down the wing, back inside the semi, and there's little Randall. His legs going a million miles an hour to go under the sticks. And, well, you couldn't ask for a better start in a Challenge Cup final.
Usually when the tries happen, I'm like wrestling with someone on the floor, or I've got mud in my eye, or, you know, I'm trying to clean my boots or something. There's usually more interesting stuff for me to do than watch you scoring. Now, because it came to my side, I was actually running along. I was one of the first people to celebrate, which never happens to me. There's like one photo of me celebrating a try, and I think that was it. Because normally there's like stuff for me to be involved in that means I'm probably not celebrating. So it was quite a special moment for me that we scored so early. There wasn't any contact. There was a little bit of shirt grabbing and looking for a bit of a fracas, but really I was just trying to catch up with Harry Randall.
A Harry Randall try after 20 seconds. The dream start to end all dream starts. Sheedy's penalty minutes later made it 10-0 in the opening 4 minutes. But Toulon were not going away that easily.
It's quite dangerous to score that early. I think I know people say is you can score too early. I mean, I don't believe that, but I know it would be easy for us to think, oh, what's this? This is easy.
The fact that we got a sucker punch in so early, I think shook a few of them out of their boots, and suddenly there was a game on. And I think they showed the calibre and quality of players that they've got, that when they get things right, they are a team to be reckoned with. And I think they'd had a bit of a rough season themselves in the league, and there was certainly a bit of a sense amongst their squad that they had a point to prove as well. And I think you saw that in the aftermath.
Oh, that's gone loose and it's been picked up by Pietau, and then Toava provides the link and Bryce Heem will score. A little slip in Bristol's midfield, and Toulon are brilliant at making the most of little slips.
Half-time and Bristol 16-10 behind. Toulon had been in this position before in European finals and knew how to close out a game. But Sheedy and the Bears still believed.
Going in at half-time behind wasn't too much of a panic because, you know, you remember their points. Their first try is a try where there's a mix-up with myself and I give them a walk-in, and that's fine. You know, that's a gift. They haven't had to work particularly hard for their tries. We know that we can contain them. We know that they're not threatening us massively. And we were in control, even though we were losing. We were in control. And like I said, with the semi-final, when we're behind, there's no panic. It's not like we need to change things. We trust our systems and we understand that if we do our systems right, then we can beat any side in the world. And yeah, it was all about just sort of rebuilding, building the scoreboard and just sort of putting the pressure back on Toulon.
I said, look at their defence. It's on, but we're just slow getting that ball back. As one example, so, you know, we knew that the boys felt good. The boys sensed, they looked over that when we were at high tempo, they were struggling. So we wanted to continue to raise that. To do that, we needed the ball. To keep the ball, we needed to be more accurate, particularly at our contact area. And then obviously when we're ahead, they will come back. They're that good. They're Toulon. And there's some quality players there that we had to man up on D and get off the line and put them under pressure, particularly their skills.
Pat's message really was the same as it was in Bordeaux, is trust the process. Like, do the things that we do. Don't go out and try and win this game. Go out and try and do your job. That's all I need you to do.
I'm just loving sort of the energy that we have as a team. And I mean, I got the easy job to put it over. The hard work is your Ben Earl getting the turnover, your Dan Thomas putting pressure on Carbonell, and Luke Morahan winning balls in the air, and, you know, Alapati being a monster in defence. Those are the things which Joe Joyce, Dave Atwood working like monsters. These are the little things which a lot of people don't see that, you know, make the team click. And people might see me putting it through the post, but, you know, that's just my job. And those boys are doing everything they can to win us those penalties. They're doing all the hard yards. And It was just the energy. I remember the energy being out there was just incredible, and the buzz we had whenever we win a penalty, it would just be a buzz. And yeah, Siali Pietau, unbelievable. Just these players which just really, really stood up when they needed to.
And we're level. Bristol level.
Those shitty kicks made it 19-all. Final 20 minutes of the game. Time for Lamb to cut his backs loose.
Our back three have a real license to go.
But Bristol will bring it back up. The Malins, Randrandra offering himself. Malins takes the gap. Malins is going to score.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you who scored it. I remember jumping up and down and celebrating with Joycey, but I can't remember who scored it. Was it Max? Yeah.
He's only being borrowed from Saracens, but what he is contributing. That is a cracking score in the final for Max Malins. And look at this, Bristol back ahead.
I remember when he's gone under the post, I've sort of looked, Semi's the nearest guy, and I've gone to hug him, and his hammy's gone, and I'm thinking, that's not ideal right now. There's still 20 minutes to play.
The joy of Malins' try was offset by an injury to Randrandra. Bristol would be without their best player for the most important minutes of the club's history.
It was a bit weird because I was buzzing. I was going to go and celebrate with Max, but then Semi's pulled his hamstring and I'm thinking, what do I do? So I just thought, right, focus on the conversion. Let's just nail that. The rest will take care of itself.
It was almost like we won the game. We scored this try and like the kind of, yeah, look, we are okay at rugby.
Pushing for all it's worth. Oh, they've got the penalty.
Everyone thinks kicks are easy, but any kicker will tell you no kick's easy. And I remember it was on the 15 on the right and, you know, people would expect the kicker to get it. Of course they would. But pressure does funny things, and yeah, I just tried to stick to my processes, like I said, and it probably was my worst kick of the night, if I'm being honest with you. I came up really quick on it.
It's on its way, and it's through the posts, and Bristol lead by 10 points.
Probably that was the kick for me, which, when that went over, I thought, this is ours now.
I remember Joe Joyce and him saying to me, we're going to win this. And I remember shouting back to him, of course we are. Like, with the kind of nonchalant, obviously slightly ironic bravado.
Here we go, and it's appropriate that it's Sheedy.
I remember kicking the ball out and then just being like, wow.
132 years of rugby in Bristol and never anything quite like this. Bristol are winning European Cups. The trophy's coming back to Bristol.
And I think I just grabbed anyone near me. I think Tom Kessel jumped on me. Adia Loken come from nowhere, and it was just absolutely madness.
It's a bit like you've been holding your breath for 80 minutes and suddenly you can breathe again, and it's like, we've done it. Just the vindication of it was so emotionally rewarding. I don't know if I've got a photo of it. I think I've got a photo of it, but there's a photo of me just sat on the floor, the final whistle. Say, I've never won a campaign trophy before. It was why I joined Bristol. It was one of the things I spoke about with Pat. It's one of my huge motivations with why I come to work every day, why I want to get better, why I want to make the people around me better, not just myself.
I remember, embracing Joe Joyce, who has been here longer than I have, and he's a Bristolian through and through. And, you know, he nearly had me in tears seeing him, because I've seen how much it meant to someone like him who's supported Bristol all his life, growing up in South Mead. He's worked for every single bit he's got, and, you know, I was just so chuffed, him and obviously Andy Irwin couldn't be there with us, but for them too, especially, I was over the moon for him, and I hugged him for about 10 minutes, I think. I couldn't release him. And yeah, brilliant, unbelievable feeling. And we definitely celebrated well that night.
Once you wiped away the tears, you drink a lot of booze with your mates.
We had a couple of beers in the changing room. We went back to the hotel. The hotel were great. Pretty much gave us the bar, because we were the only ones staying there anyway. We had Chris Rui pulling pints behind the bar, John Afoa pulling pints behind the bar, great barman they were. And yeah, quite a few of us went through till the 6:30 plane the next morning. So yeah, again, probably one of the best nights of my life.
We obviously FaceTimed a load of the guys that obviously couldn't travel out and be with us. FaceTime family, FaceTime my kids who couldn't care two jots.
It was a good night. Funny enough, it was with the restrictions, it forced all of us into, our plane was leaving the next morning. So I know Chris Boy bought a bit of champagne and I had a bit of champagne that night, but we all did together. You know, normally you have those things and there's other people coming in, but to have it just with the players because of COVID was actually quite a special moment. And it was tough for the boys that hadn't travelled. So they had celebrated and sent us videos of them celebrating. So when we got back that day, that afternoon, they had another celebration to get the whole squad, and that was important too.
The side who'd been in the second tier of English rugby only two seasons before, the journey that began with Pat Lam's restructure that would see Bristol come through the most challenging of seasons, would end with glory. Dave Atwood, Callum Sheedy and Pat Lam's Bristol Bears lifting major European silverware for the very first time.
And it's Bristol, big bears, daddy bears, European Cup winning bears.
We haven't had much of an opportunity, this group of players, to really bond together in that sense. And it was a really special thing to be able to kind of sit down and have a few beers. And I think most of us, even on the plane home, we were still wearing match kit kind of thing. It was a special thing to be savoured. And I think it's easy to kind of be disparaging about that, but you can't replicate the emotions that you feel at that moment in time. So just trying to prolong that feeling and bottle it up as much as possible.
You know, I wish we could have had Bristolians out there with us, but it just means we've got to go and do it again, and hopefully this time Champions Cup. And every time I put on the Bristol jersey, I know it's a cliche, but I get very proud, and I've been very fortunate enough to play in some big games, play over 100 times, and to win the Challenge Cup for this club is by far the most special moment in my career.
The reason why I love rugby success, the reason why I love that vision, is that when the boys win something, it's an acknowledgement or reward for the work that everyone's done. It is on behalf of the squad, the staff, Steve, Lansdowne, Chris Boy, our board, everything. That's everything we put together is to win that. And it's just a joy to be there, and we're winning things. That's the dream.